also had an adorable 5-year-old today who was telling me all about his poo and then would just suddenly like say, "I really love my daddy," like out of nowhere in the middle of a conversation about his poo.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony, and I'm back with my four of us in total, three co-hosts, Mira, Hatim, and Johannes. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
This week is Mental Health Awareness Week, and perhaps more than ever, I think it's really important for us all to think about our mental health and well-being during everything that we'll all have experienced over the last few months during the COVID-19 pandemic. This week's episode is all about that. And to open us up, I had a conversation earlier in the week with my friend and colleague, Ami, who is a GP, a first five GP in London, and also the first five well-being lead in the RCGP's first five committee. So we'll move over to Ami.
Hi, my name's Amrita. I'm a portfolio GP with an interest in occupational medicine, positive psychology, and physician health. I'm also the first five well-being lead with the RCGP.
Thanks for taking the time to speak to us on the podcast today. And this week's episode is all around mental health and well-being in honour of Mental Health Awareness Week, which is, there's lots of content which has been produced around that this week. And I guess part of this conversation is all around how we can look after ourselves a little bit better and what well-being really means. So maybe kicking off with that question, what is well-being? And why is it more important to be having those kind of conversations now more than ever?
Yeah, that's really interesting, Anthony, because I was actually looking at this and I was thinking, what is the definition of well-being? Because actually it could mean different things to different people. So I thought I'd just have a look at a quick definition. And the one that I found that came up really quickly on the internet was a state of being comfortable, happy and healthy. And then I thought about that and I was like, that's actually really broad. And then you think, oh, actually, no, I really understand that. And then I reflected on it again and I thought, no, that's actually really vague. And I didn't quite understand what that quite meant, especially at this particular time. What does it mean to be comfortable? What does it mean to be happy? And health is such a precarious term at this moment. And I think that really got me reflecting on this concept of well-being and what is important to us at the moment. And I think for me, and from the learning that I'm doing at the moment, well-being is actually this umbrella term which is made up of component parts. And when I think of myself personally, I think of these intersecting circles, and I think of my emotional well-being, my psychological well-being, my mental well-being, and my physical well-being, and all these interconnecting circles, almost like a Venn diagram. And at one point in time, one will be more important to the other and I might focus on that, and at another point in time, you know, my physical well-being might be more important. And certainly at this moment in time, with the COVID-19 pandemic and the crisis, the change in our working situations, I've certainly noticed that my emotional and my psychological well-being are hugely important, and those are the parts of my life and the parts of my colleagues' lives, my clients' lives, that we're really trying to work on at the moment, securing the emotional and psychological well-being of people. Because if we're able to do that, we can focus on more positive aspects of this terrible pandemic that we're going through at the moment.
Yeah, I can, that definitely resonates with me. I think everything feels very up in the air, and it has caused us to kind of refocus on exactly how we respond to different situations. We'll be being faced by lots of challenges we might not have experienced before, both in our work lives and also our personal lives. And I think if nothing else, the time that we've all spent in lockdown has given some people a chance to reflect on how they might manage some of that. And I guess a lot of people will be feeling not just a lot of new emotions or emotions they might not necessarily be used to feeling, but also perhaps feeling emotions which are more common in a slightly different way under a very high pressured kind of situation. Is there anything kind of around coping mechanisms that we might usually use might not necessarily work in these situations. Any tips or kind of advice around adapting those to meet this new challenge?
That's a really interesting point, Anthony. You almost hit the nail on the head there with a lot of the conversations that I'm having. So the way I've seen it as well, with a lot of the professional interactions that I have having at the moment, and I probably hadn't thought about it in this way before. I probably hadn't really considered this so much, but we're really transferring a lot of energy in the interactions that we're having with people in our personal and our professional lives. And these relationships mean so much more to us for so many different reasons. And I think largely because we're not physically able to see people who are outside our immediate family. And in the role that we play in our professional lives, because we're all GPs, we play such an important, compassionate and empathic role that usually when we're doing this, we can replenish our resources. Because when you're giving to people all the time in this type of capacity, you need to do that. You know, you need to refill your bucket. You need to credit your account almost. But at this time, the usual mechanisms that we have don't really seem to be working because we're living in a really unusual circumstance. We can't really do the things that we love to do. We can't really do the things that we want to do. And so because we're not living in a normal circumstance, a lot of the emotions that we're feeling are not normal, or we haven't experienced them before. So our coping mechanisms might not be working. We might be doing everything that we usually do, but these strange emotions, grief, struggle, guilt, anxiety are coming up. And we don't quite know how to deal with these because we're feeling a range of positive and negative emotions in the same day. And what I'd say is actually, this is probably normal for this time. Feeling this discomfort, feeling this strain is probably very, very normal because we're not living in a normal time. Our sense of safety, our sense of security has been skewed, it's been shifted. So what we know to be normal isn't normal anymore. And we've had to recalibrate a very, very fast rate. And so I go back to that old saying of it's okay to not be okay at this time. It's okay to feel these things. And we need to start trying to get used to this level of discomfort. And we need to start trying to figure our way out of this wilderness, as it were. So I suppose the question is, how do we deal with these negative emotions? And I would say the first thing that we need to do is recognize them. And we need to catch ourselves from having these negative thoughts and that critical voice inside our head, because we all have that critical voice that wants to come out. It's akin to having, you know, 100 positive interactions in the day, but having that one negative interaction, and that one negative interaction is the one that lingers with you. And so we need to try to reframe our narrative, reframe the way in which we view things, in order to try to view the positives in our lives. And there have been some studies that have shown that actually when we use positive words, the neurotransmitters of serotonin and dopamine, which are motivational neurotransmitters, actually fire more. But then when we use negative words, they actually stop being produced, which actually is quite interesting. So if we try to change our mindset, change our narrative, we can actually help ourselves. Then the second thing is by acknowledging these feelings, we're really, really helping ourselves, because we can face our feelings then. We can figure out what it is that we need. How are these feelings affecting us? What can I do to help myself? Do I need to do this by myself? Can I do it with the support of my loved ones? And if that isn't working for you, do you need to go beyond that? Do you need to go into the realms of getting scope from an external source? And that's absolutely fine. If you need to have support from a medical source, you know, if you need to get medical attention with these emotions, that's really, really important to recognize. And we're in a really privileged position where we have those support mechanisms out there, because, you know, 10, 11 years ago, they didn't exist. So we need to break down those barriers, break down the stigma, and, you know, encourage people to seek help when it's needed. And by acknowledging these feelings, we feel less disempowered, we can name them, and we can manage them appropriately. So we just have to have a think and think, what's right for us, what's right for my well-being, and how can I utilize what's right for me with the support mechanisms out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all really important advice. And I think there's something to be said around for any of us who, you know, any of us who are going kind of living through the current times that we're in at the minute, sharing or being open with ourselves, let alone other people, about these emotions always has a certain amount of vulnerability associated with it. And that's something that we're never kind of taught particularly well, particularly in our professional lives, is about how to be vulnerable and how to kind of open up about some of those emotions. And I think that if we're able to start doing that, not only will it be good for us, but being able to kind of utilize those feelings, like those vulnerable skills in being vulnerable with patients as well, can sometimes open up a whole different type of consultation as well. So I think emotion plays a huge part in all of our lives, and not just in how we feel and how we appreciate ourselves, but also in the work that we do. And it's probably true in every field, but I think particularly like medicine is or healthcare is an obvious one to apply it to, is actually we deal in emotion. And so being able to acknowledge how situations and circumstances impact on our own emotion hopefully might make us better, more thoughtful healthcare professionals as well. I don't know if that's something you think.
I agree wholeheartedly, Anthony. I think that we can only really extend true compassion and kindness and vulnerability to others if we allow ourselves and give permission to do that to ourselves for ourselves. Because how can you recognize that need in somebody else if you cannot recognize it in yourself? And that's about connecting with yourself and about connecting with that need in yourself, allowing yourself to be vulnerable and giving yourself permission. I think that's wholly important, hugely important. Thank you for bringing that up. Really, really important in our profession.
And I also, the kind of the reference you made to kind of gratitude or kind of refocusing our own minds, and actually when we kind of think certain positively about certain things, can actually, you know, biologically, biochemically have a positive impact on our mindset as well. And I know lots of people have kind of you know, reference things like gratitude journaling and ways and like skills that you can use to help focus on that. Is that something that you have much experience of, or any other kind of tips you might be able to share with people for going about that?
Yeah, gratitude is something that I'm studying in my master's. It's a really important topic and subject, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest and to support the importance of gratitude. And by paying gratitude to others in our lives, and also to ourselves for our own actions, we're able to do great things in our own personal lives, but also in our community as well. Gratitude helps us sleep better. It gives us better quality of sleep and better sleep duration, which then impacts on our productivity. It impacts on our mood. It increases happiness by 25%. And it increases our immunity as well. So it actually increases life expectancy and longevity. The way gratitude works is it actually activates our reticular activating system. So what happens is that when we start paying gratitude to things, if we want to, say, write a gratitude diary or a gratitude journal, like a lot of people have started to do these days, we start to notice things more actively in our day-to-day lives. So the more we use our reticular activating system, the more it starts to become active, if you see what I mean. So it's almost like you know, positive reinforcement. So the more you use something, the more active it becomes. And so we start collecting things that become more grateful for, and we start noticing more as well. And the more you start being grateful, the better you become at it as well. So you start becoming grateful for the smaller things in life. Essentially, practice makes perfect. So we celebrate the positives, and that cultivates what we call a positive mindset and a growth mindset as well. And therefore, we become more creative. We are better at having generative thought. And therefore, we not only become more grateful in our own environment, in our own locus, but in an external locus as well. So people become more positive as well, just by seeing the gratitude that we're displaying. So it's a really, really interesting phenomena. I have some books and some studies that I can give to you in the links afterwards if people are interested in gratitude. But it's a really, really interesting phenomena. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, we will definitely be sharing loads of resources with you guys in the description of this week's podcast. So do check that out as well. When it comes to well-being, people often talk about kind of five pillars, which are essential to your own well-being. Was that something you'd be able to kind of give us a bit of a further information about?
course, yes. So these five pillars of well-being were actually researched by the New Economic Foundation in 2011. And the science behind it essentially is showing us that these five pillars not only support our short-term well-being, so the here and the now, but if we work on them, they actually support our longer-term well-being as well. So they future-proof our mental health and our physical health and our emotional health in the longer term. So the first one I'll talk about is connection. So that's connection with people and connection with loved ones, with pets, and anything really, but not material things. And the important part of connection is having the quality of connections and not the number of connections. So it's not, oh, I've got, 20 friends or 20 loved ones in my life. It's the quality and the energy that you put in that loving relationship. And when you can nurture those relationships, actually great things can happen for you. It improves altruistic behaviors. It reduces inflammation. It improves your immunity and it improves your empathy as well. And that can be hugely important for our line of work. It not only improves those aspects, but it also improves our value system and our own self-esteem. And that can be also very motivational for the line of work that we're in as well, especially at this time of the COVID-19 crisis, where people might be feeling a bit lacking of energy. They might be feeling a bit, lacking of motivation and low in self-esteem because of the different changes that are going on, which is completely natural. And another aspect to this is actually going to work is hard at this time, but actually having that physical connection with people. So if any of trainees are working in the hospitals, actually you can think of this as being a real positive for you, because having that physical connection, working in teams, can actually be really, really supportive at this time, because connection is really good for us. The second part is physical activity, and I'm not going to go into why physical activity is, that when we do partake in physical activity, we release serotonin and dopamine. And as I've said, those are really, really great neurotransmitters, which help us with motivation and energy. Taking notice, that's the third one. So becoming more mindful of things around us. Again, practicing this skill is really, really important, because it's not something that you can learn in a day. Practice makes perfect. So if we nurture the positive emotions, we nurture the ability to become mindful. We have evidence to support the theory that positive emotions can act as a buffer to us against the negative emotions, and they can act as a resilience reservoir in the future to help with times and stress and anxiety. The fourth one is learn, which is a concept of flow. So I'm not saying that anyone should go out and learn anything new, because I think this isn't the time for people to be going and learning new skills that we've all got so much to do at the moment. But what I would say is, if you have a hobby, if you have something that you're particularly interested in, whether that be reading or whether that be playing the piano or drawing, whatever it is that you're interested in, try to make some time to enjoy that skill, enjoy that hobby, because what you will find is that you can put other things to the side. You can get into this state of flow, which is really, really important to help you with positive emotions, and it can actually build on psychological credits moving forward. And then giving. Now, giving is really important in normal senses, because it promotes altruistic behaviors, which we know make us feel good. But I'm going to turn this on its head, and I'm going to go back to something that I spoke about earlier in the podcast, and that's giving yourself permission. Giving yourself permission to be kind to yourself, to practice self-compassion, and to feel whatever it is that you need to feel at this time, and work through that in a way that's positive for you, in a way that's going to be helpful for you. Because I think as doctors, one thing that we don't do is give ourselves permission to be human. So that's what I would say when it comes to give, in terms of the five pillars at this moment in time. For doctors, it's very, very important to give yourself permission to be human.
Yeah, and I think it nicely reflects back to a couple of things that we've touched on around vulnerability and how your normal coping mechanisms might not necessarily work. So giving yourself permission to kind of acknowledge that, acknowledge the difficult feelings that we'll all be going through, is really, really important. And I guess also within that, I really like the way that you framed all of that, because it does feel that these five pillars are important, but are, you know, kind of unique to individuals. Everybody might have a natural style to kind of put those into practice. And that natural style also might not necessarily be something which fits during the current COVID-19 pandemic, or might have to adapt. So giving yourself permission to recognize that things that might once have worked might not necessarily work in the same way at the minute, I guess, is all part and parcel of that.
Yeah, I agree. We need to be kind to ourselves. We need to realise that what might work for your friend might not work for you. What might work for your husband or your wife might not work for you. Your time to figure out what it is that you need is also really, really, really important skill, but also time well spent. Because I think we're so busy in our lives that we don't give ourselves that time to think about what it is that you want and what it is that you need and who it is that you are, actually. Who am I and what works for me? So we spend a lot of time developing our professional selves. Spend time developing your personal self as well. Figure out what it is that works for you. I think that's really, really great advice, Anthony. Thank you for sharing your perspective.
And when it comes to other ways that people can help themselves, particularly during the current situation that we find ourselves in, are there any other tips or kind of resources or pointers that you'd give to people?
Yeah, so I would say I've got two take-home messages. If anyone's going to take home anything from this, is change the narrative that you have in your mind to a more positive one. Reframe the language that you use, because you are in control of the language that you have. Try to remove the critical voice that we all have. And I'm not saying that you are never going to have any critical thoughts, but just try to, you know, minimize that as much as you can at this moment in time. Reflect on the negative emotions that you're having. Embrace them because they're really important. They're trying to tell you something, but be reflexive to them. So don't just reflect on them, but act on them as well. Embrace them, acknowledge them, recognize them, name them, and manage them.
I think that's really, yeah, an amazing kind of take home message from this, and something that hopefully everybody will be able to put into practice. I know that just from my personal perspective, the last few months have had lots of new challenges, both personally and professionally. And so actually, just even like the 20 minutes that we've spent talking to each other has just been a really nice opportunity for me to reflect in a slightly different way than I have been doing over the last few months as well. So I really appreciate again you taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate you asking me to come and speak with you today.
Great. So we'll share lots of links that Amy's kindly given to us, and Amy's also going to be running a series of webinars which we can link to in the description for this week's podcast, and we'll also put your Twitter details on there so that anyone who's interested can get in touch with you as well.
Thank you, Anthony. Yes, I'm happy to share all of those with you. Really, really look forward to speaking to you again.
So that was I really enjoyed that conversation with Amy. And as I said, I think it gave me a personal chance to reflect on things and emotions that I've been experiencing over the last few weeks in a slightly different way. And hearing her put into perspective some of those pillars of around well-being and give us some top tips for thinking about different coping strategies during a kind of different time was really, really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was really fascinating to hear it. I guess she's doing a master's about this subject and talking about it from the gratitude perspective. I thought it was really, really a fascinating thing that I hadn't really thought about it like that before. And the other thing that struck me was talking about how we all do tend to have coping mechanisms, but that they may not work in times like this, and recognizing that actually your coping strategies that you've been maybe employing for months or years might not be ideal for this situation, and recognizing that that's okay, and trying to step away from that and finding something else that may work for you and may also be working for other people. So talking about it is really important. So that really resonated with me, I think.
Yeah, I think the thing that I took away and I've been thinking a lot about recently is kind of vulnerable, like personal vulnerability, and sometimes how that can apply to our working lives as well. So I don't think you necessarily have to overshare with patients about your own personal experiences, but I think being vulnerable to me means kind of being conscious of your own emotions, reflecting that back to patients and kind of giving them the permission to not be okay as well is a really important part of being able to have a good consultation and a good relationship with patients.
And I guess clinically we've all sort of come across probably more mental health than we have maybe been accustomed to. I know personally, for instance, been speaking to patients where perhaps anxiety has become more of a factor for people in their everyday lives. And maybe, actually surprisingly for me, it's been a lot of patients who haven't really contacted the practice before for very many things, maybe an odd infection here or there, but the sort of burden of not really being able to leave their house and now restrictions have sort of been eased a bit makes them feel very, very uncertain about what the right thing is that they maybe should be doing, because they're feeling they're getting lots of conflicting information, one from the media and sort of a political side of it, but also from their friends and from their families. And having those conversations with people, I've been finding that it's been, whilst it's been good to have the more time because we're doing more things over the phone or via video consultations, which I think makes it a little bit easier to have those conversations, sometimes having that lack of personal connection when someone's sat in front of you talking to you about their worries and you can feel maybe it would be a bit easier to talk about it, I found that a little bit tricky. And the other side of it also is it's quite emotionally wearing. I don't know if any of the rest of you felt that when you talk to lots of people about similar sort of things every single day and you don't really offload how you feel, maybe that's been a bit hard. Has anyone else felt like that?
I mean, just coming on to that, Mira, I think I found is obviously in when you're in general practice, it's quite difficult with mental health presentations because you do require a lot of time, a lot of investment with the patient, try and understand their problems and support them. And often you have, you know, if you have 10 minutes, it's almost impossible. And I always like to bring them back towards the end of the day when I've got a bit more time to actually delve into things with them and explore things with them. But that is something that is really interesting to hear about. How are you guys coping with that? With those, you know, presentations and consultations remotely, because normally having a person in front of you can actually give you a better understanding of their mental health, their mental status, you know, their suicidal risk, you know, the things that we have to sort of stratify at that point. So have you had any struggles with that using video or remote consulting?
One thing I've noticed is that we're relying quite a lot on patients, both with mental and physical health problems, to be completely honest with us and completely open about how they're feeling, because I've kind of picked up down the line a little bit with a few patients who've kind of represented themselves to be in quite a good state. And then when you actually do end up seeing them face to face for another reason, you find out that actually they were just kind of putting on a brave face. And when you're not seeing that person up front, you know, as much as we're trying to get a good impression of what state they're in, we are still very limited, particularly with mental health and knowing what the real situation is. And I found that can be quite tricky.
I found for some people that's definitely the case, but actually for a decent number of patients that I've spoke to over the last few weeks, I found that in some ways the remoteness of a telephone consultation gives them more license to open up. And I'm not sure if it's because they feel under less pressure or potential judgment than they would feel if they were in a consulting room with a doctor, but the kind of vague sense of anonymity that a phone consultation gives to people, actually for a lot of patients that I might not necessarily have had too constructive a conversation with before, has actually really enabled a certain cohort of patients to open up. I don't think that's the case for everyone, and I think there will be lots of people who aren't coming to the GP to speak about their mental health mm-hmm. issues in the way that they were before, and that's obviously something that we need to work on. But it's really showing me that actually remote consulting and different digital tools can really help enhance the mental health care that we provide to patients as well.
Yeah, and I think just being able to give patients those options is really nice, because they're options that maybe they weren't aware of before, and they're options that maybe we wouldn't have felt so comfortable with before. But I think, yeah, as you say, there are definitely patients for whom that's a really good opportunity to open up without that pressure of being sat in front of someone. But I think especially for the older generation, they're more likely to, you know, put on the brave face and kind of try and manage things at home.
Yeah, I think I'd echo what you've all said, really, that it does depend on who you are as a person and whether you're more likely to feel comfortable being face-to-face and bringing that up, or whether it is over a phone. Rarely have I been doing any mental health consultations over video, but perhaps that might be something that crops up in the future. I think one thing that I found really reassuring, though, is that when I've had consultations with patients over the phone about their mental health, I've been sort of offering that I will book in to speak to them again maybe the following week, or for some patients, you know, working around their work schedule to find a day that may suit them in that week or the week after that. And I think most of my pet, I would say 95% of the people that I've spoken to are really receptive to that and do appreciate sort of you offering that appointment out to them, because that, you know, there is this overwhelming sense that we are hard pushed in the NHS and that they don't want to be wasting anybody's time, and they necessarily may not have booked an appointment themselves again for a checkup, as it were. So being offering that out, I found to be really, really helpful for the people I've been speaking to, at least.
Those follow-ups actually are a lot more effective, I find, when you do have a consultation with a patient and offer that option at the end, and then actually have the opportunity to do that remotely and at whatever time is best for the patient following that initial consultation can be really, really good for both yourself and the patient. It gives you time to go away and think about any additional resources that might be helpful for them. And it gives them time to sort of process their feelings and think about what other support mechanisms that they need in place that you can help them with. And also, I guess, thinking about the types of course, it's Mental Health Awareness Week, and people are still isolated during this pandemic. Thinking about the types of presentations that are coming in from an emergency medicine point of view, I found that there's actually been a lot more sort of presentations with people with alcohol misuse, really suffering during isolation and suffering with certain relationships or breakdown of relationships. It just, I guess, puts things into perspective about how important someone's home support mechanisms and environment is in helping them during times where they might not be having as much exposure to people as they normally would.
And I think another thing is also being aware, if you're in primary care, but also obviously working in hospital, of what mental health services are available for your patients in that particular area. I think a lot of people think lots of services may be pared down or shut down because of the current crisis, but actually, you know, psychiatrists and their mental health support staff are really working hard behind the scenes to support people through what they recognize is a really trying time. I listened to a really interesting webinar from one of the psychiatrists who sort of works in an at-home team, kind of support team network. And obviously not trying to put a COVID spin on every episode we do, who's sort of saying, you know, there are huge sort of challenges within mental health. So for instance, trying to section somebody in their house with current guidance has actually been really difficult to try and overcome, and how to ensure their safety and everybody else's safety, and whether sort of other members of those teams, say like police and the fire department, what protocols they have in place, because lots of people factor into that when it comes to taking sort of public welfare into account. And the other interesting thing that they were saying is, obviously there are lots of people who are on medications, especially antipsychotics, that need monitoring and regulation of those, and how you think carefully about what medications people may be on, if you're dose titrating them, making sure they are getting the bloods that they need. And he spoke really interestingly, actually, of a few people who are presenting as if they're having sort of lithium toxicity type symptoms. Obviously these are for people with more significant conditions who are under a mental health care team anyway. And turns out they were positive for coronavirus. So it's a really interesting thing where, you know, initially, at least for me, I thought it was a predominantly respiratory system affecting disease. But as time has gone on, I think we've all experienced, you know, coronavirus manifesting in all sorts of different ways. And mental health is no stranger to that either.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, as well as kind of thinking about, you know, the different ways that COVID can impact on kind of delivery of mental health services, it's also obviously preventing patients coming into the GP practice. And we've already said that some people might benefit from that, other people might not. And I guess something that I found really helpful over the last couple of weeks is thinking about how to create that kind of remote safe space for patients. And it's not just relevant to mental health concerns, but to any problem they might be coming to the GP with. And obviously the consulting room is seen as that kind of confidential safe space, which a patient's own home, they might not consider to be the same. And so I think kind of just being a bit kind of more explicit around the confidentiality of the conversation, introductions, kind of scene setting at the beginning of the consultation has been really helpful to kind of open up patients and allow them to share in a bit more of a constructive way. But also I recognize that for a lot of patients who are currently getting in touch, they might not necessarily feel in a safe environment, or they might not necessarily feel able to open up in the same way surrounded by family or other people that they live with. And I think that is something that we need to bear in mind is how we start broaching those kind of conversations. And as we as kind of the initial wave of COVID starts to settle down, how can we better identify people who might benefit from coming into the practice purely because it will lead to a more open and honest conversation?
And this sort of harks back onto something I mentioned maybe a few episodes ago, is also recognizing who your vulnerable patients are in your patient population. Obviously, we know the elderly were vulnerable and are continue to be those who are in shielded groups, but also issues with domestic violence, children who are on, you know, child protection policies and all of that. These are patients who we all really are mindful of and want to do the best we can, although it's really tricky at the moment. So we have our social prescriber who is giving a call to all these patients who are on our vulnerable lists, not just those who are shielded, but again, maybe histories of domestic violence or on protection plans with safeguarding. And that's just an added layer of support that I think all of our staff have really, really appreciated, because she is utilizing her time so wonderfully, but also making a big impact. And I think we've all agreed, not just during this current pandemic, it's something we would want to do going forward as well, making sure people have an extra support of contact. And I don't know if anybody else has also been sort of being asked by patients about resources for help, because I think often when you're having a video consultation or on the phone, obviously there's only so much you can broach or sort of develop into having a conversation, and they ask about other websites and things. And one that I found really useful actually is the NHS Every Mind Matters website. So I'm sure you've probably seen it. There is just a plethora of resources on there, but also lots and lots of helplines as well for varying things. So from, you know, teenage age children, younger children, people with OCD tendencies, men, that sort of thing, which I've been directing quite a few people to, and they've come back to me saying, actually, it's really helped them to have that extra layer of support.
Mira, I think it's actually wonderful actually for your patients to know that they, you know, they've got that support from the practice. The practice is actively calling them and checking in on them during this time, those vulnerable patients. It must feel great for them to know that you're there. And actually following on from that, thinking about Mental Health Awareness Week as a whole, just sort of reducing that stigma associated with mental health and making people realize that, you know, it's not normal to feel a certain way. They need further support. They, you know, the health service is there for them. And it's a really unique opportunity for us to spread that message and know that and to let people know that we're here for you if you need us.
Yeah, I think that this is obviously, we've spoken a lot about patients, but also reducing that stigma is something that's important for us as healthcare professionals as well. And a lot of kind of the focus of different organizations over this week will be encouraging people in all different professions to think about their own mental health. And we know that COVID will have had a huge impact on all healthcare professionals working in any capacity over the last few months. And so I know that all of us will have experienced really difficult emotions at times. So being not afraid to kind of admit, own up to those and handle them as you need to is really important. And as Amy said in her section, often that can just be solved by sharing that with yourself or with your loved ones. But I think it's also important to recognize that many doctors and other healthcare professionals throughout their careers do need to seek kind of professional advice and support outside of those normal circles. And that's totally something that many of us do, many of us have done, and many of us will do during our careers. And it's important to recognize that it is okay not to be okay. And it's totally okay to seek the support that you need and deserve.
Absolutely. I think that's really, really vital what you've said there, Anthony. And I think the other thing as well is about being kind, isn't it? I think during this pandemic, we have just seen swathes of community support, neighbours helping out neighbours, people helping out, you know, elderly people that might live in a flat and are unable to get what they need. And you're seeing really good stories in social media and the news pretty much every single day, and how that the, you know, acts of kindness can have huge impacts on other people's mental health, but your own as well.
Yeah, I know that my dad was furloughed from his job for the first 6 weeks or something of the lockdown. He's just started working from home again now. But during that time, he took, you know, kind of joined up with my parents live in a tiny little village in the middle of Suffolk, and joined up with their little local community team who were delivering shopping and prescriptions and things. And, you know, when I spoke to him, he said he was finding it pretty challenging not being at work. He's someone who's always like thrived on the busyness of being, of doing something, and to kind of lose your purpose was difficult. But that really helped him deal with some of those negative emotions that he was experiencing during the last couple of months as well.
So probably it's a really good way for us to kind of end this episode on a video that we found that sort of reflects on those points and most importantly has a take-home message of being kind.
Yeah, so obviously this week, Mental Health Awareness Week. The theme of this year's Mental Health Awareness Week is kindness matters. As Mira has just said, acts of kindness are super important, not just to others, but also to ourselves. And so this week's video comes from UK, the Mental Health Foundation, who is kind of one of the main organisations behind Mental Health Awareness Week. And we will just play you out with that.
At times like these, when the world feels upside down, kindness can be the key to turning things around. You see, kindness has the power to create community, support and hope. A helping hand says you're not alone when you face that upward slope. Of course, being kind is always the right thing to do. But did you know that doing good is also good for you? You see, a little act of kindness can boost your mental health. It can lower stress and cheer your mood to think of someone else. And of course, don't forget to be kind to yourself. It doesn't have to take a lot, because even the smallest spark can be the thing to light the way when someone's world feels dark. So make that call, share that gift, send some happy posts. And this Mental Health Awareness Week, remember, kindness matters most.
So as we finish this week's podcast, I think it's also just an important reflection just to say, do take care of yourself. We're going to be sharing lots of resources in the description for this week's podcast. And if you do need any support at any time, then make sure you seek that and make sure that you do take part in those little acts of kindness, which can make things feel a lot better during such difficult times. Until next time, take care. We'll see you again for another episode of Somewhere in Between.
Bye.
Bye.